Welcome to part 7, Vitality. Vitality is probably the most underestimated and overlooked aspect when it comes to creativity and reviving that creativity. And the reason why I think people usually don't have a tendency to take into consideration the amount of health and well-being, and not only just mental well-being, like taking care of your mind and learning and growing in that aspect of growing yourself mentally, things like meditation and eating right and drinking water, but other things too, like taking care of your body, like exercising and stretching and making sure that you get proper rest and making sure that you have the proper intake of food and vitamins. All of these are important, and they're important because you need to have the energy to sustain that high level of creativity for long stretches and long periods of time when you're actually working. So if you're sick all the time, if you're constantly getting cold or getting the flu, I don't think I've even taken a flu shot. Like, it's been a while since I've actually gotten a flu shot because it's just, there's just certain things I just won't eat during certain seasons, which is causing other people to get sick. So I'll just avoid those foods altogether. I'll avoid those high acidic foods. I won't put those into my body, and therefore I won't be getting this quote unquote flu because I'm avoiding the season of it, the trend of eating high acidic foods and not getting enough alkaline in my body. I am not a doctor, but I do know that there are specific ties when it comes to health and vitality and raising that point of health and using that vitality and exercising and going to the gym and working out or going for a brisk walk or a light run is really important. Is your mood overall pleasant or good? How much time do you actually spend exercising? Do you ever take the stairs? Have you meditated? These are all good questions and things to consider when you are looking at your overall health, your overall breathing in and then breathing out, just that, and making sure that your health is congruent and that you are alive and that you have blood flowing and that you raise your heart rate and that you sweat as often as you possibly can. So vitality is probably, like I said, the most underestimated aspect of the creative and artistic arsenal, and often overlooked in almost every book involving and becoming creative. And I'm not sure why it's overlooked. I'm not sure why it's just people aren't taking the health aspect into consideration when they're actually growing and actually leveling things out so they can actually have the energy. Especially if you perform, if you're a performer or on stage, or if you're a musician that's performing on stage, you know how important it is to have that energy. You need to have the physical energy to perform, to do the task, to do the exercises, to do that performance, to fill in that show, to do that dance, that or that play, or those scenes. And having physical energy is a part of daily life. I mean, even if you're working a job and you might be like an accountant or working in finance, you still need to take care of your body. It's still important to go to the gym, to take care of your body, to exercise, to eat right. These are things that are just very important just as far as being alive. But I'm bringing it into this system because it's something that's simply often overlooked, and it's not something that's usually talked about among artists. Yeah, there are plenty of artists that are overweight and that create, and there are artists that are thin and that, you know, take care of their body and they do work out and they do exercise. There are some that smoke. There are some that, you know, are completely overloaded on drugs, and there's some that aren't. You know, I'm not knocking. I'm just saying that, hey, you know, live life the way that you want to. I'm just giving you some options as far as creating ideas. I do know that usually when I go for a brisk walk, if I'm stuck or if I can't come up with a sound idea. I can go and exercise and know that when I'm exercising, when I'm not necessarily thinking about things that are thinking about the idea per se, but when I'm just out for a brisk walk and I'm breathing in and I'm taking those deep breaths and I'm exhaling and I'm seeing nature around me when I'm outside and I can feel the air against my skin and the smell of life and the sound of life all around me, there is something that gets played differently. It gets experienced differently. I have usually a flood of ideas or something might strike me and it might give me an idea or a direction to go in that I didn't consider before, simply because now there's the chemicals that are bring joy and bring pleasure and bring delight. Those get initiated and then those become activated and then those are ones that are brought into those really help. Those help me with coming up with ideas, with coming up with concepts simply by exercising. And I also use exercise as a time to kind of like personal time to spend time in my head where I can walk and I can imagine different ideas and I can just let my brain be completely unhinged and unrestricted. And by having that unhingedness and that unrestrictedness of exercising, that will help me come up with better concepts. I feel stronger about working for longer periods of time. I just feel better. And when I feel better, I want to create better work. And I'm much more excited. I'm much more optimistic and anticipating what comes next. So living, so the aspect of living and creating and improving your vitality is a very, very vital part to creativity. Very vital part. When you're actually growing and trying to mature in that realm. There's no way you're going to be able to consistently create and bring your ideas into reality if you're sick and tired all the time. And since the brain uses a whopping 20% of the body's total energy, it would be wise to fuel it with the proper resources. Yeah, you heard that right. The brain uses a whopping 20% of the body's total energy. That's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of energy just to keep your brain function. I would imagine there's also a lot of things that are going on in the brain as well as firing off of energy and electricity and sparks and all of that energy. Because your brain, think about it, like your brain has to, it does everything without you actually having to think about it. It's regulating your heart rate. It's allowing you to see. It's allowing you to hear and interpret the sound that's coming in through your headphones or through your speakers so you can interpret and make sense of the words that are being delivered to you. It takes in oxygen and it takes in carbon and takes oxygen and it converts it back into carbon. It spits it back out into the universe. It's managing your blood flow. It's allowing your kidneys to process and to filter things that are bad for you that you may not need. It allows you, it's like I said, it's pumping blood throughout your entire body. It keeps your heart beating. It keeps your lungs regulated. It even keeps your body at a certain temperature. It's regulating everything. So it's like the master control system for your body. So why wouldn't you take the time to make sure that it's first taken care of, so that you can actually live your life, let alone do something extra that you enjoy doing? Why not take the time to really understand and really take care of that body? It's the only one that you're gonna have. You can't get a new body. This is the only body you will ever have. So taking the time to really, really appreciate it, making sure that you're getting proper rest and taking in the right fluids and, like I said, the right nutrients, it's having the resources and giving your body the proper resources is what's going to help it sustain things over the long term. Not only will eating right foods that will enrich your body and mind and give it the energy it needs, but also spending time taking care of your body with proper exercise to keep you physically intact. Taking in vitamin and water soluble foods, which are usually green foods, you can actually Google and look up the scales of alkaline and acid intake. And a lot of the foods that are alkaline heavy, that are great for alkaline is good for your body. So I'm pretty sure some of you have heard like the pH balance. The pH balance is the proportion from acid to alkaline. Acid, of course, is bad for you. And that comes in a lot, forms a lot of fried foods, fried chicken, french fries, anything that's usually like fried or processed foods as well, those have a tendency to have a lot of acid in them. And acid breaks down your body. You may have heard things like sugar also has a lot of acid in it. And I'm pretty sure you were told as a kid, some of you were told as a kid that, hey, don't eat too much sweets or your teeth will fall out. Well, sugar doesn't burn holes in teeth. Sugar can't do that. But what happens is that when your body ingests that sugar and it can't do anything with it, it converts into acid. And it's the acid that's actually causes your teeth to decay and causes the insides of your body to decay. So it's not the sugar, but it's how it gets processed. And then it actually gets converted into an acid because your body can't turn it into a nutrient. Then that's what causes your body to kind of break down even faster. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have something called alkaline. And alkaline helps to restore your body. It gives your body fuel. It gives your body energy that your body can then use and shoot it. And then the rest of your body also uses that energy as well in order to, so you can function and get through the day. So things that are rich in alkaline, things like broccoli, lettuce, plenty of nuts, dried fruit helps as well. Fish, chicken, I want to say grass-fed beef, but I don't think our body actually needs, I actually went to a seminar where Tony Robbins was talking about how our bodies actually don't even need meat. Like you just don't need, there's plenty of ways to get protein without eating meat. And we don't even have the teeth to really eat meat. I mean, aside from those small canines, but if you look at other carnivorous animals that are primarily designed to eat meat, their teeth are not flat. They're sharp. Most of the teeth are sharp, where most of our teeth are flat. So we're not even really designed to eat meat, but we can consume it simply because we're human. And it tastes good. I do like a nice cheeseburger. I will tell you that. So having that, considering eating also foods that are also water soluble, a good amount of water in them, usually plant-based foods are very, very water soluble. And that will also help with you having that daily intake of water that you need throughout the day. Just to keep that in mind, just to drink plenty of water. Coffee is usually diluted. Coffee is acidic, just in case you were wondering. Coffee is very acidic. I do drink coffee, but I also like to drink a lot of water as well to make sure that I actually feel better after drinking a good amount of water. There was this mantra that I started a couple of months ago, and I had noticed the patterns of the food that I was eating and actually how I felt after I ate. If I ate something that was really like protein heavy or a lot of meat, or if I didn't have a lot of green on my plate, I noticed that I felt groggy, I felt tired, and I would usually try to make up with that with like an energy drink, with something like a 5-hour energy or a Red Bull. And of course, that's pure acid and sugar. And obviously, that's a very, very bad long-term strategy, which is why most people would just do it in the short term. However, I'm not condoning that that's a good idea. It's not. But with coffee specifically, coffee has a lot of acid in it. Oils as well, that's also in coffee. But when you're drinking that coffee, it gives you a quick boost and usually there's a crash. When I would eat food that wasn't necessarily good for me, obviously I would resort to those things, the things that were a quick pick-me-ups, but I knew that it just wasn't going to last. So I started this mantra called fuel, not food. And whenever I would get hungry, like around lunchtime, I would ask myself, what would fuel me? And oftentimes it was Chipotle that I would go to, or I would go to Subway, or even if I decide to go to another restaurant, I would look at the menu and ask what would fuel me, and I would get something like a salad or something that had a lot of green in it that would give me a lot of the energy that I would need. And this helped. This helped a lot because I began to regulate what I was putting in my body, and I noticed that I would feel wonderful after I ate. And I would feel alive. I would feel that I had more energy and I was much more alert and I had much more focus. And I would feel that I could just keep going and I wasn't sluggish and I wasn't having that, you know, that 2:30 or 3 o'clock crash. And I wasn't feeling diluted because I was eating foods that simply weren't good for me. So when I started eating more fuel, when I started that mantra and I started, you know, taking into consideration what I was actually eating, it was at that point that I was actually able to really, really notice changes in the way that I felt about my body. Even the way that I felt in the morning when I woke up, I would try not to eat too late. Or if I did, I would eat something really light and something that had a lot of water in it. So then I would know that it's notice that I would not during the night, I would be tossing and turning. Or when I wake up in the morning, I would not have that feeling of, oh, I'm exhausted and I don't have any energy because my stomach had spent the entire night trying to digest the food that I had taken in from the night before, which usually has a tendency to, it'll drain you if you're not careful, that sometimes the food that you ate for dinner will have, your body has to process it and break it down, but it'll do it while you're sleeping as well. And when your body is breaking things down, that is really when, and you're sleeping and you're eating something that's really heavy, it'll pull the energy from you, everything that it possibly can to keep you asleep so you can rest. And but the rest of that energy goes to actually breaking things down in your stomach. And as things are being broken down and the less energy is being put on having you recover, when you wake up, you may have that feeling of being groggy or, you know, not wanting to get out of bed, and it's really, really hard and it's extremely difficult. And a part of that is because your body has actually taken the energy that it would have used to revive you. Instead, it used it to break down the food in your stomach. So you didn't get the restoration that you needed from the rest because it was breaking down the food in your stomach. So according to the 2010 statistics, most American adults take about 5,000 steps a day. The Australians take about 9,700 steps a day, and the Swiss typically do about 9,650 steps a day. So American adults take fewer steps than both the Australians and the Swiss. We are also the most obese country, like, on the planet. No one's encouraging us to eat more grapes or apples or carrots. It's all about fast food and TGI Fridays and Applebee's and McDonald's. And it's these businesses are actually shoving these foods down our throats. And I get it. You're running a business. I totally understand that. And it's not their fault, but it's the appeal. There's not necessarily a push within the agricultural industry to cause people to eat healthier. I don't think I've ever seen a Chipotle commercial personally. There might be some out there. I might just have to like go on YouTube. I'm pretty sure there's some out there, but I've never really. But then again, we've also been inundated, you know, as a kid, even from eating things like Burger King and going to Chuck E. Cheese and Pizza Hut. And granted, yeah, it tastes good, but it's usually not good for you over the long haul. So that's just something to keep in mind, you know, is having that push and having that discipline to really take into account, you know, the things that we're putting into our bodies and really push that on ourselves to make that conscious choice. I don't have a Fitbit, but I do, like, my phone will actually register and it will let me know if I have taken my daily steps that I needed for that day. It'll let me know, hey, Kendall, you've reached, you know, 2,000 steps or at least in that session. So that's helping. It helps a lot. Technology is actually helping us a lot when keeping track of the steps that we need. Take time to go and take a brisk walk. And you might say, hey, Kendall, you know, I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to, you know, take the walk. Well, you don't have to walk an hour every day. You can start in the morning with 5 minutes every day with walking for 5 minutes. And the 5 will lead to the 10, and the 10 will lead to the 15, and the 15 will lead to the 20. You don't have to, you know, go out and just run a marathon and be like, yeah, all right, I've already got this and I'm good to go. What would life be like? Do you think that you would actually get the result that you wanted if you just decided to put on all your gear and then grab your water bottle and then you grab your towel and you put on your sneakers and your bandana and your sweatbands and your headphones and you walked into the gym and you strutted in and you worked really, really hard for like 35, 40 minutes and you left and you're like, "Ooh, I'm glad I don't have to do that again." Is that how that works? That you only have to do it once and you're done? No, of course not. That's ludicrous. You constantly have to, it's a slow step. It's a slow process of gradually working out at your own comfort level. You start small, start with something really, really simple. and then you can grow from that. When I, if I hadn't worked out in a really long time, usually I would just go to the gym. Like if it's been like a month or so, if I go into the gym, I would just go and I would usually just hop on the treadmill and I would just walk. I would walk for like 20 minutes. And then after that, I might 10 or 15, I would do a set of like five set of like 10 push-ups. And then I would do some sit-ups. I might do some squats and that's it. I wouldn't hop on any machines. I wouldn't touch any weights. And I would just get into the habit of getting my body back into motion. And the more I began to do that, eventually I would begin to gravitate more maybe toward the machines and then from the machines into the heavy weights. So I never try to beat myself up because I'm feeling that, oh, well, I didn't go in and spend like an hour, you know, or an hour and a half sweating and coughing my lungs out because I didn't run a marathon the first time. I don't try to do that. I usually just try to get my body moving, creating motion. And the motion will create positive emotions and that kind of reinforces. So, you know, motion creates emotion, and motion is the source of life. That's the sign of life. Now, the ideal range for optimal exercise is typically about 20 minutes per day. And it's going to be a light jog, a light run, or swimming. And it's just, like I said, it's just action. It's just moving your body. And it doesn't have to be strenuous. It doesn't have to be overly complicated. It can be a light jog if you want. It could be a walk. It can be jumping jacks. It can be push-ups. The idea is to get your heart rate up and get used to moving and starting something really, really simple so that in the future, you know that you can have what it is that you need in order to, you know, get through your day. And yeah, at first it's going to be a little challenging. I will admit, you actually might feel a little tired the next day too, or at least for the next couple of days that you work out. You might work out and like, oh, I'm exhausted. I don't want to move anymore. I totally get it. Like that happens to everyone, especially if you haven't worked out in a while. But what happens is the more that you do it, the more energy that will your body will begin to generate. You'll begin to generate more and more energy, and that will give you enough energy to kind of to spend more time doing those exercises and doing the things that you want to do when it comes to, you know, to maintaining your health. So just take your time, be safe, be patient, don't strain yourself too much at all, and it'll help. Like, one thing that I like to do when I'm jogging, there's a mantra sometimes that I like to do. Like what I will do is I will breathe in and I will count to make sure that I get deep breaths in and not just breathing shallow. So when you're walking and you're moving, the idea is to get your heart rate up so that you breathe deeper. And the more that you breathe deep, the more oxygen that you give your body, the more oxygen that you, your brain, the clearer that you think and the better that you feel. So it's not just moving your body and get your heart rate up. You also want to be breathing deep as well, and deep controlled breaths. So when I'm walking, what I like to do is I will use usually my thumbs and I would kind of touch them against the edge. And for every single breath that I breathe in, I would kind of just breathe in four, and then I would exhale four deep. So it would go something like this. It was, and as I'm doing that, I'm breathing in deep, I'm counting my breaths, and I'm really feeling the way that I want to feel. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling proud. I'm feeling that I'm contributing. I'm feeling that I'm growing. I'm feeling that I'm being present in the present moment. So I would touch, like when I would touch and I would breathe in, I would touch my index to my thumb and then my middle finger to my thumb and then my ring finger to my thumb and then my pinky to my thumb on both hands. And then I would do it in reverse. My pinky to my thumb, my ring finger to my thumb, my middle finger to my thumb, and then my index finger to my thumb. So it's, and I would do that. Be careful. You might want to do like one or two in the beginning because it might leave you a little lightheaded at first because you're just not used to it. So be careful when you're doing this, but it does cause me to breathe in deep. It reminds me to breathe in deep and to be much more aware of what I'm doing. Now, something else you can do that I know that really, really helps, and that would that you can do from the comfort of your own home. You can do it at your desk. It's something that you can do on your lunch break is meditating. Now, the idea, I know meditating can seem kind of like Zen-esque and a little weird and a little too philosophically Eastern for some. The art of meditating is really about just simply, I don't want to say just being present. That's part of it. That's kind of what manifests from meditating. It's the patience of sitting at first and just waiting. You're not waiting for anything specifically. You're just sitting, being there. And what happens is usually when you're sitting and you're breathing and you get yourself into position and you're breathing, what happens over time is that you have all these thoughts that are running through your head. You're thinking about, okay, well, I'm sitting here, and you start thinking about, okay, well, how long do I have to sit here? And then you start thinking about, maybe you're thinking, okay, is there anybody watching me? And you start, your mind starts to wander off and thinking about things about you have to, maybe something you have to do about the day. What you want to focus on when you're meditating is your breath. That's the whole point of meditation, is to simply focus on one thing, and that is your breath. It's not necessarily just the act of sitting there, because you can sit and let your mind wander and then you'll grasp on to different things. But the real point of meditation is to simply focus on one single thing. And the one single thing you can focus on that you have complete control over is your breath. You can't control your thoughts. You're not supposed to. But having the act of sitting there and you're getting yourself into position. If you could see me here right now, I'm actually doing it right now as I'm talking to you guys. But you sit and you focus and you breathe in through your nose and you exhale through your mouth. And you breathe in through your nose and you exhale through your mouth. And the only thing you focus on is that breath. And as thoughts are coming, thoughts will come and thoughts will go. And you just keep focusing. You can even count to yourself silently if you like. And that will help you as well. And to focus on that breath. But what happens is what you will notice over time, the more that you do it, is that you start noticing gaps between your thoughts. There will be periods of time that your thoughts will become silent. You will have no thought at all. And then you're like, wait a minute. And then the thought will kick in, and then it might manifest into something else, into other streams of thoughts. The more you do it, what happens is that you'll have gaps of silence between these thoughts. And those gaps of silence will help you in more ways than I can really explain. But it's helped me in a way that if something were to happen, and instead of being reactive, I'm able to remain calm and not respond and not react to my initial thought that comes up. And that helps me tremendously, especially if you're working in a high stress environment, a high stress job, or your career, if it's a high stress, then it helps to have the ability to not be led on by your thoughts and having the discipline to be able to become non-reactive to the external environments and to the external conditions that are happening around you, which are all the time. We're always in a state of reaction, and we're always reacting to things that are happening around us. But when you meditate, you begin to gain a little more control over the thoughts that are happening. And if you can control those thoughts or not become reactive to those thoughts, then your body won't react. You won't fly off the handle and say something that might hurt you in the long run. Or you might not get negatively upset or become negatively emotionally impacted by something that's happening. You'll be able to be completely rational about what's happening and being able to handle it rationally and rather than reactive. So you become proactive instead of reactive. You begin to make a decision about what to do rather than simply being the subject of the external stimulus. And that is something that's a very, very simple principle that really helps you in the long run. And it does help to be able to not be a prisoner of your own mind. Meditating is something that definitely helps with that once practiced enough. Another important aspect of vitality is growth. I don't mean like dabble in doing something easy, but really stretching yourself and doing something outside of your comfort zone. When you want to grow mentally, the best way to do that is to learn, that's to read, that is to ask questions, that's to challenge your own beliefs. And when you grow, when you take the time to slightly stretch yourself out just outside of your comfort zone, that nice sweet spot, what happens is that you feel like you're at a level where you are doing something that might be familiar, but there's an element of it that's constantly keeping you stretching to where you're just outside of that comfort zone. And that's the spot you really want to be in. And you want to do that consistently. You want to take time to grow. You want to take time to practice a skill. And you don't need to spend a tremendous amount of time. It's not like, you know, you're basically, it's not like binge watching a movie. It's not like you just binge practice or binge grow for a short period of time. And then like, that's it. And then you're done. The best way to grow and to stretch yourself is to do segments over a long period of time. And you don't want to go more than 3 hours for a single segment, because then after that, your brain just kind of starts to say, okay, buddy, I'm done. And it starts to just basically shut down and begins to wander off into something else. So, and even then, 3 hours, if you do that every single day, you're hitting that 10,000 hour mark. So that puts you on the level of an expert. Now, obviously, 20,000 hours is the level of mastery. But taking, even if it's an hour or if it's 20 minutes, I prefer to do about 3 hours. I will practice very simple, something very, very simple, or study or read or write within that 3 hour time period. It changes. It's not necessarily just the act of doing it. It's doing something that causes you to stretch and consider and shape your mind into something before. And once a mind has been changed to a certain point and shifted and new ideas are brought into it, that it can never go back to its old form. So you would want to keep stretching. You'd want to keep learning and you'd want to keep growing. And yes, doing simple practices would definitely help you reinforce the practical side of your daily discipline and should never be neglected. And practicing the simple things daily is what leads to mastery. And it's those simple practical things that you practice and that you study day in and day out that really lead to the mastery, that really lead to you becoming extremely proficient. And it raises your level of vitality, of execution through repetition. So that's something that you can take with you no matter what you do, whether it's practicing musical scales or, you know, taking photographs with even your cell phone and just practicing taking just really good shots. And you might learn that it's not the tool, it's being disciplined in that action and making sure that the decision that you're making and the effort that you're putting in and day out is, you know, is going to add up over a period of time versus doing the same, staying in your comfort zone. And granted, yeah, you might have a lot of the same things that you've done routinely before, but at the same time, you also want to make sure that you're bringing something new into the mix so that you can actually see a measurable difference between where you started and where you are now. Bruce Lee once said this great quote. He said that, I do not fear the man who knows 1,000 kicks. I fear the man who has done a few kicks 1,000 times. How does that work into vitality? It's not necessarily the width of it. It's the depth. It's not doing 1,000 different things. It's doing one thing until you become really, really good at it and challenging yourself in that arena and making sure that you actually have spent the time to actually get really, really good at it. And it takes time to get really, really good at things. And you want to make sure that you're actually spending time and doing the things, the right things that are necessary to bring you into the skill and develop the course of your growth, of your personal growth in that regard. Now, we have actually gone through all 7 pillars, and you might ask yourself, do all of these pillars need to be used all at once? Like, do you have to have all of them in place in order to have it work? And the answer is no, you don't. You don't have to, they're all number one. They're all equally important. There is no one, two, three, four, five set order that you have to, that you can apply these pillars into, they're all number one. They're all equally important. And when you practice them, when you make them a part of your lifestyle, when you make them something that you can, that you do on a daily basis, when you take time to really, really understand and apply these things and write it down and make it a practice and not just a thought, when you're making it into something that you actually do on a daily basis, something that becomes a part of you, what happens is that, you know, you begin to notice little changes. You begin to notice various degrees of things that are coming into play when you are, when you change your beliefs and your psychology and your emotion and your imagination and develop and use systems and apply the creativity and nourish your vitality, your experience of living will change. The way that you experience life will become much more qualitative than it will be quantitative. And that's the whole idea, is to improve the qualitative aspect at which you are living life currently. It doesn't mean you have to have more things or you have to have something external to fulfill you so that you can feel good about where you are now. It's appreciating where you are now and finding little ways to improve the quality of that experience. There are tons of tools out there that'll, and tons of resources and tons of people that will tell you, well, you know, if you get this new job thing, you'll be happy. Or if you get this car, you'll be happy. Or if you have this body, you'll be happy. Or if you're able to get these girls or these guys, then you'll be happy. And just remember that there was a period of time in your past where you thought that where you are now, you would actually be happier. We constantly have a tendency to think that the future will always be better. But now, where you are now is where you have every right to be happy. You don't have to pawn off happiness into the future. You don't have to wait for some kind of magical scenario for the stars to align just right to appreciate where you are, or learn or grow or change your beliefs or develop new cycles of thought in your psychology, or, you know, manage your emotions. You don't have to pawn that off into some kind of distant future. You can do that right now. And by using each of these pillars, whether you use a few of them and you start with a few of them, or you might find one that you might be strong in one area already. You might already have the mental and physical growth. You might already have that energy. You might be taking care of your body. You might have a great imagination and a great psychology. But, you know, what about your emotions? Are you emotionally healthy? Are you modeling the right systems? This is why all of this it's one cohesive unit with no specific level of importance. Like I said, they're all important. This is much more of an introduction to a lot of the content that's going to be rolling out over time. And they will typically all fall into one of these pillars. And hopefully you will find something in this that will actually help you and help you grow and help enrich your quality of your life and help you in ways that I probably can't even imagine, and to help you become a little bit better than where you are now. That's it for this program. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you and for listening. I really appreciate you guys. And if there is more that you would like to, any questions or any comments, definitely join on Facebook at Giftbox Creative. And there we can continue the conversation. If there was something that I said that stuck out to you, or something that a takeaway that you've had, post it on Facebook. Post it and share it. Let everyone know. Let me know. Tag me in it. DM me as well. I mean, I'll answer to your direct messages. Let me know and let the public know what is one something out of this entire program. I know it's a lot. There's probably a lot of things that probably struck out. But what's something that's unique to you that you found valuable? Go ahead and share that with your family and friends. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Feel free to send an email to giftboxcreative@gmail.com. And yeah, go ahead and send me an email. Feel free to ask any questions that you may have. If you're listening to this on Facebook, feel free to go ahead and leave a comment, and also rate the page as well. If you are the Facebook fan page, I'm definitely welcome and open to ideas for other subjects that you guys may be interested in, but we can go ahead and collaborate and get those going. So thank you for listening to this segment. And if you have any questions, feel free to let me know. Also, there will be other series as well that will be coming up in the future. But for now, the light at the end of the tunnel may be